And we'll move to the last case for this morning, United States versus Head. Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Williams for the defendant and appellant, Mr. Head, in this case. Your Honors, obviously our argument here is an extremely simple one, but some courts that have looked at this have said that, well, it's appealing on its face, but maybe it doesn't go any farther than that. And I can certainly understand, at least, or appreciate those sentiments, because it does seem to be overly simplistic.
Well, you mean all of the courts that have looked at it have not agreed with you, right?
Right.
All of the appellate courts have looked at it. But certainly there have been district courts that have looked at it that haven't come to that conclusion and have given this extensive analysis.
Now, let me just say that some people are bigger fans of plain language analysis than others, and every now and then the courts are presented with a statute that, I'll just say, requires reading the statute as a whole to understand what message is getting across. And one recent instance, which I believe has now been fixed, had to do with appeals in certain kinds of class action situations where Congress accidentally wrote that you could file your notice of appeal no less than 10 days after the order in question, meaning perhaps 20 days or 100 days or 16 years or whatever you wanted. And there were quite a few courts that said, in this instance, quite literally, less means more, that you have to file within 10 days just to come up with something that worked with the whole structure. And I think that's what our sister circuits have done in this case as well, particularly given the amendments to this statute that were effectuated by the Anti-Terrorism Act. The fact that we skip over this subsection 11, since subsection 11 itself has changed over time, shouldn't we follow Congress's original understanding? That is to say, the pre-EDPA substance?
Certainly there is evidence. If you want to look at what congressional intent is, there is certainly, and I can appreciate the evidence that suggests that Congress meant for the provision to be included, which allowed for community confinement. I think that is not an unreasonable conclusion. The question is whether we should be engaging in that exercise to begin with.
Can I just clarify? I looked at the statute, and it looked to me that as if it would not have been permissible for the district court to have simply imposed 2.5 years of imprisonment, given the categorization of it. Because if that would have been all right, then I don't know what kind of case you have. But it looks to me like the time in prison could only be up to the 24 months.
I'm not certain that's true, Your Honor. It may have been that they had the ability to impose up to 36 months of imprisonment.
Well, what class felony? I thought that this is the underlying offense was 922G, right?
That's correct.
And what class felony is 922G?
I do not. I can't tell you if that's a B or a C. But
then it's 24 months. If it's a B, it's 36 months. And I think a first time 922G is a C. But I'm happy to be corrected.
I believe that the court is correct on that. If the question,
that actually helps your argument, because it means that 6 months in quasi incarceration, if you will, 6 months of restricted movement is kind of a hybrid situation.
Well, it is, and if I understand what the court is getting at, I mean, to some degree, the defendant in a case like that could simply decide not to comply, and there may not be any type of sanction that's available after that. And I suppose that what we're talking about here is a situation where the court recognized that and was trying to remedy the situation of only having 24 months available to it and giving that additional 6 months. And while, and that's true, we haven't made the argument that this is some type of quasi-incarceration that may have been what was going on in the court's mind. It appears that that is. However, if the statute did allow for that type of a condition to be imposed, certainly the court was free to do that. And so it does bring us back to what the ultimate question is, and that's the statutory interpretation. And I think it is a fair conclusion that it is certainly possible that that's what Congress intended. But you can look at a lot of aspects of this and say, well, what was it that Congress intended in this case? And I think that in doing so, it invites the conclusion that Congress would have intended, had they thought to go ahead and amend 3583 as well. And that's probably what they would have done had they thought of it. Again, we're not absolutely certain of that. But in looking at the arguments on the side of the government, especially in examining the Bai case in the Ninth Circuit, for example, the Eighth Circuit case, rather, one of the main arguments is, hey, we look to the statute as it existed at the time of its incorporation. And on its face, that seems to have some appeal as well. But the problem with that is if you want to go back to the statute as it existed at the time of its incorporation, then any subsequent amendments wouldn't apply.
You're in your rebuttal time, but I just wanted to call one other thing to your attention. In 3583D itself, in the area that you've been focusing on, it says the court can impose any condition set forth as a discretionary condition of probation in Section 3563 B1 through B10 and B12 through B20, and then here's the part, comma, and any other condition it considers to be appropriate. So why wouldn't it be permissible for us to construe this as falling into that last bit, the any other condition it considers to be appropriate?
Well, Your Honor, I think that when you have an enumeration of particular types, of conditions, and specifically when this is one that is also now excluded, I mean, it exists. Congress could have chose to have included that, and maybe it intended to, and maybe it didn't, but it did not. And then to lump in a provision that has been specifically excluded by the plain language would be inappropriate in this particular case. I think that maybe this is not a good analogy, but when we look at the Supreme Court's decision in Begay and how it tries to analogize to what the specific provisions were, that's a similar type of analysis that the court is asking that we engage, or that you're bringing up here, Your Honor, is if we look at what's specifically listed and analogizing to those things, a condition that is specifically listed yet not included should not be one that should be included within the more generalized provision. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks. Ms. Scott.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Angie Scott. I represent the appellee. I think it's important, as Your Honor pointed out earlier, to look at congressional intent. If you look at the...
Some members of the Supreme Court, as the recent decision in Ali underscores, really don't think you should do that. If the statute's plain... you just read the language of the statute. That's the only thing you can rely on. And those of us who've had any... association with the legislative process sometimes think that's a very wise rule.
And I think in some circumstances it is, Your Honor, but I think...
Whereas the Supreme Court said you only look at the statute's plain language sometimes, it seems to me they say that's where you always start.
Well, I think that's one of the things they mention is if it's ambiguous, you can look past the plain language. And I think
what's ambiguous about B1 through B10 and B12 through B24?
Well, as Bay pointed out, the Ninth Circuit case,
it's always dangerous to cite the Ninth Circuit. I said it's always dangerous to cite the Ninth Circuit.
Okay. Well, one of the things they noted was if you look at the congressional intent when they enacted this this act in 1984, they specifically included residence in a community corrections facility as a condition of supervised release.
But you're not answering my concern, my prior concern, which is that you see a lot of language about congressional intent, but Congress passes statutes. It doesn't pass committee reports. It doesn't pass heaven knows it doesn't pass statements in the congressional record. So how do we get past this glaring omission of subpart 11?
Because I think if you look at, I'm trying to answer Your Honor's question. Maybe I'm not doing a very good job of it. But I think in this case, it's warranted for you to look past the plain language, because if you look at just the plain language of 3583D, what you're saying now is, look, B10, which is now governs intermittent confinement, mm-hmm. is included. Well, Your Honor, that can't be included. As Behe pointed out, intermittent confinement cannot be a condition of supervised release because supervised release only begins after the full term of imprisonment has begun. So if you look at the plain language, what you're saying is, look, Congress is saying, hey, a district court can sentence someone to intermittent confinement when it's not something that they can do. And you're looking at, you're excluding residency in a community corrections facility, which is something that Congress specifically intended to include when it enacted this law in 1984.
I was going to say, this: if Congress really believed that community confinement was allowed, you know, is there any, like, amendment in play right now? Has there been any action in Congress in light of the ruling of all the circuits and the conflict when you look at the plain language of the statute?
Your Honor, to be honest, I don't know. I don't know if there's any amendment in action right now. I don't know what, if they are. I mean, it seems to me like with the issues that are coming up that Congress should mm-hmm. maybe look at amending this. But I think if you look at the cases, the Court of Appeal cases that have addressed this issue, it's clear that Congress made an error, that Congress, by not amending 3583D to now say, you know, B1 through B9 and B10, or, yeah, B11 B10. Through B whatever, B23, yeah. that deserves a look past the plain language of the statute.
But I guess then the institutional question is, and I actually think you're right, it does seem to be obvious that Congress made a mistake, but is the remedy for that something that lies in the hands of Congress, or is the remedy for that something that this court can step in and legislate, since Congress didn't get the legislation right?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's a good question. I think that many of the courts of appeals that have addressed this have said, yes, the court can go in this kind of circumstance and remedy an error made by Congress by saying, yes, community confinement is still allowed as an authorized term of supervised release.
People make impassioned speeches about judicial activists when judges go in and try to fix statutes.
I agree, and Your Honor, I think that the thing here is we're not asking the court to make some major change in the legislature. Basically, what we're asking the court to do is say, look, you know, it's clear that Congress intended for intermittent confinement not to be an authorized condition of supervised release, and for residency in a community corrections facility to be an authorized condition of supervised release. So that's what we're going to.
Excuse me. Is every circuit to consider the subject followed your line of thinking?
The circuit courts have,
yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Well, then there's no mistake. That happening, how many have done it so far?
First, 8th, 9th, and 10th.
So what reason has been given Congress to address the issue at all? Assuming that they've made a mistake and acknowledge they made a mistake when the courts have corrected it for them.
Well, it seems like, I guess, to avoid further litigation on this issue, they would go ahead and clarify.
Why would they? Why avoid? They're winning. What the hell? Oh, they want everything.
Well,
why get in the act?
Well, as my co-counsel pointed out, or my counsel, opposing counsel, not my co-counsel.
Yeah.
As he pointed out, there are some district court cases that have held to the contrary.
Yeah, the district court cases, they
yeah.
don't
intrigue.
We're
don't not going to listen to that.
They don't intrigue Congress as much as the Courts of Appeals, because we have to follow the Courts of Appeals, mm-hmm. not the district courts.
That's correct, Your Honor, yeah. I mean, you're
unless
right.
Unless the Supreme Court, Johnson. I mean, more than likely, the Supreme Court would pop in to solve a problem if there was a conflict between circuits, or among circuits. Apparently, there's none at the moment. There's no incentive for anybody to do anything. Why don't we give them a little incentive if that's what you want?
Oh, okay. You lost me there for
a
second.
I say if you really think Congress
ought
to change
it. You don't want us to give them incentive.
No,
your answer is no to his question.
Right, okay. I'm sorry. You lost me for a second, but I think you said no, we don't.
Well, what you said was Congress should address this because everybody thinks it's an error on a trial level, right?
Right.
Okay, we can give them an incentive to do something about it. We rule against the district court's positions.
No, I think as Judge Williams said, I think I don't want to give them an incentive.
The Department of Justice does not want it, at least at this stage.
No, Your Honor. I would just conclude by saying that if you follow what the defendant is arguing here, what you're telling the district court is, or what you're doing is, you're basically ignoring the congressional intent when they first enacted this law in 1984. To specifically exclude intermittent confinement as a condition of supervised release, and to specifically include residency at a community corrections facility as an authorized term of supervised release.
That's true, but I guess, you know, we have to worry about this slippery slope argument. The next time it'll be some other subsection that somebody thinks, oh, well, Congress clearly meant this to be there. Let's just add it in.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think there is an argument that, you know, it should the appellate court look past the plain language. Here, our position is that it should.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Ms. Scott. I think you've got a little bit of time left, Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honors. I wanted to take up a couple of the issues that were raised during the government's time. And with respect to rewriting the statute, and the Supreme Court has addressed the issue of what happens when you have a Scrivener's error. And we cited to this case of Lemie versus United States trustee, and there was a case where it appeared that the court all agreed that there was a mistake as to whether or not attorney's fees for a debtor's attorney should be excluded, and that was an accidental exclusion. Nevertheless, their conclusion was Congress should fix it. And I think this is another example of a case where speculating about what Congress meant to do only invites more confusion and problems in future cases, and quite potentially here too. And one of the things I would point out is one of the arguments that has been relied on in other cases is this incorporation doctrine of how the statute read at the time. One of the things that it incorporated is this that has since been eliminated was discretionary fine as part of probation and supervised release. Is that something that now is supposed to be read back into it? Or subsection 20, which is now a condition that apparently was not before, comply with terms of any court order or administrative process that was moved from subsection B21 to 20. Then you've got these other subsections. Subsection
they can't leave well enough alone, can they?
No.
but they're the ones who do it.
I know.
And they're
the ones that have the right to do it, the constitutional right to do it.
And they certainly get upset when the courts meddle in their affairs, and maybe that's what we want to avoid here as well, Your Honor.
Make them happy at the same time, compel them to do something.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.